This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV.
Welcome back. It's the Now News Panel on AMI. I'm Dave Brown, joined by Judah Gupta and Michelle McQuigg. Let's get into our next topic. Barbados is dropping its connection to the Queen and the British monarchy. The Caribbean country has declared itself a republic. The drive to become a republic began more than two decades ago and culminated with the island's parliament electing its first ever president last month. Prince Charles was at a ceremony earlier this week.
You write the next chapter of your nation's story, adding to the treasury of past achievement, collective enterprise, and personal courage.
Only 15 of the 54 countries in the Commonwealth still retain the Queen as head of state, Canada, of course, being one of them. Joita, this story caught your attention. Why?
Well, it goes back quite a ways. So as you know, I'm an immigrant. Well, I guess you could say I was an immigrant from India, and India being a republic. When I became a Canadian citizen in 2007, one of the things you have to do as part of your oath of citizenship is swear your loyalty to the Queen and her heirs and descendants. And I was standing there and going, what just happened here? It's always interesting for me to think about this issue as someone who grew up in a republic and the world's largest democracy at that. And then I came to Canada and suddenly the Queen is the head of state again. And there hasn't really been a similar move to remove the Queen as head of state since the early 90s. I think Mauritius was the last country to remove the Queen as a head of state. And there's really a moment here where there's so many questions that crop up in my mind as well. Is this the beginning of a mass exodus? Are other countries going to bail and say, we don't want the Queen as a head of state? Is this something that Canada should be thinking about doing? We've had a lot of questions about Indigenous issues and reconciliation come up recently. Is this going to move us in the direction of asking that Canada should be a republic? And, you know, even if people did want Canada to be a republic, how feasible is it? So lots of things to unpack. And it's just a fascinating story because, as I said, I'm the immigrant who had to swear an oath of loyalty to the Queen and all her heirs and descendants. And I admit, I thought that was a little weird.
Yeah, I've had a couple odd moments in regards to the Queen allegiance. I was at a gala dinner once with our senior producer, Andrika Delanarol, and someone got up and said, to the Queen, like in the middle of a thing. And we were like, what on earth just happened?
What century is this?
Yeah, seriously, like for real, what century is this? So Michelle, Joita poses a really interesting question there. Now, again, bearing in mind, there's only about 15 countries left in the Commonwealth that have retained this relationship to the Queen. But now that Barbados made this move, do you see this emerging as a bit of a trend for these other 15 countries to consider?
I'm a little skeptical as to whether or not it's going to be a trend, just because so much of it is going to come down to actual mechanics of constitutional amendment. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with Philippe Lagacé. He's a writer and a prominent expert on constitutional monarchies and all, you know, Westminster Parliament systems in general. He has a great blog where he can take really deep, nerdy dives into a lot of this stuff. And if you're nerdy like me, you find this quite interesting. So in Canada, for instance, apparently it is exceedingly difficult. Could Canada function without a queen? Yeah, definitely. But the sheer mechanisms in place and the procedures necessary to make that kind of change come about are deeply complex, and I think would be very hard to pull off given the kind of political climate we're all operating in these days. So for that reason, no, I don't necessarily think the actual shift and following Barbados's lead will itself become a trend. But I do think there's a lot of factors at play, Barbados being one of them, that makes the questions more pressing. And I suspect we might hear more discussion about it, even if we don't necessarily see action. All of this bearing in mind, too, that I am not a constitutional law expert by any stretch of the imagination. So this is my armchair take at best. But that's sort of my take, is that I suspect we'll hear about it, but not necessarily see a lot about it.
Despite what some people will tell you, a constitution is not a sacred text. it can be changed. It just takes a lot of work to change one. So if there's an impetus, if there's a movement to do it, I could see countries picking up on this, but it takes time. I mean, I mentioned this is a 2-decade movement in Barbados before they were able to actually declare themselves a republic. It takes political will. It takes a lot of time. And certainly, as we discussed in the last segment, things like a global pandemic maybe are going to be occupying the minds more of political leaders than necessarily changing the way in which their government manifests. But Joita, what do you make of the assertion there in terms of Westminster-style parliament and where the Queen relates? Do you still see a relevance at all constitutionally or the way in which a government operates to keep that connection to the monarchy?
Well, in theory, it provides some checks and balances to the power of the prime minister. So there are countries where the president is an absolute head of state. Well, not an absolute head of state, but has far more concentrated powers. In a country like Canada, for example, you've got the military that swears loyalty to the state, not to a prime minister. So it does offer some checks and balances, I think. There have been some arguments made that, at least in Canada, we enjoy a quote-unquote close relationship with the crown. Apparently, we've had the largest number of visits. But I don't get the sense that it's the most pressing issue on the public plate. And to many of those points about checks and balances, you can have that with a president as your elected head of state, like in places like in India, for example, where I was from, or now in Barbados, the president is actually elected by the parliament. So there are mechanisms to make sure that those checks and balances exist. I just, if you don't mind, Dave, want to go back to the point about whether countries will follow suit, because one of the things we neglected to talk about, or I think we missed, is that there was quite an impact of the Black Lives Matter movement in places like Barbados. And I think that is an important signifier to this whole conversation, because, you know, it does re-energize the conversation in a number of Caribbean countries about their history of slavery and the connection between the crown and that history of slavery. And there are younger people who have often wanted to get rid of the monarchy for whatever reason, being one of them being that they see that as their final step in decolonization. But to Michelle's point, and to quote and to sort of draw on Philip Lagasse again, it is monumentally difficult to accomplish that. They got lucky in Barbados because the government basically had has swept the elections in 2018. They have a majority. They needed a two-thirds vote to be able to change their constitution, which they got, and they snuck that in there without too much of a problem. In Canada, you're going to need unanimity from all 10 provinces, plus you need the federal parliament to get on site, and although a referendum isn't strictly required, you'll probably want to have referendums in each of the provinces.
Oh, yeah, you definitely want the people, to vote on this, for sure.
It's a whole rigmarole, so I don't see it really being feasible, but I think that there's a very different context when you think about a career Caribbean country versus Canada, because the BLM movement has really kind of galvanized the thinking around slavery.
Strongly agree with that. And when you think about the relationship Canada's had, Dave, you mentioned the close relationship with the Crown. Canada's relationship to the UK has been largely benign. That has not necessarily been the case in other countries where, yes, Canada was a colony, but we've had a lot more autonomy. The relationship has had a very different vibe. The royals have been very sort of warm towards and in praise of Canada publicly. And we've had our own constitution now for coming up on 100 years, like 90 plus years now. So it is a different context here. And the needs to shake off the vestiges of colonialization are perhaps felt to be more pressing elsewhere where the relationship has been more overtly negative.
I want to get to the colonial side in just a second, but I want to answer my own question that I asked about 6 minutes ago, just in regard to sort of the
sorry, from Dave.
But it's fair. Like, you know, it's like we should get to the colonial point of view. I just want to mention that some of the separation that exists with the current way in which we have the Governor General as a representative of the Queen versus the Prime Minister, it does create a separation in regards to sort of diplomatic power versus political power. And there can be some advantages, right? We look at the executive level in the United States. Joe Biden is the one who has to do the diplomatic luncheons and the tea parties and the cocktail parties, as opposed to just doing the act of governance. So there are some advantages to the structure of our system that says, hey, you go deal with the tea party. I don't mean the tea party as in the political party. I mean, you go deal with the actual tea parties, and then I'm going to go deal with the politics. There is something to that at least strikes me, and it's worth mentioning. okay, let's talk about the colonial aspect because you both went there, but I hijacked this thing and wanted to get it back on my side of things. All right, so let's talk about this colonial legacy because people in the Caribbean are suggesting that becoming a republic can be a way of shaking off some of the vestiges of colonialism. Does that hold the same weight in Canada? Michelle, you mentioned the relationship between Canada and Britain has been somewhat more benign. I would also suggest certainly Canada has its own history and legacy with slavery, but largely when we talk about the colonial impact in Canada, it's about the reconciliation that we're talking about amongst settlers and amongst Indigenous people. This is something that I don't think can be solved by removing ourselves from the Queen, because it was the government of John A. Macdonald and forward for the last 150 years that was violating the rights of Indigenous people that continues to happen to this day. So I don't think I think it might be a small symbolic gesture, but we need to be very honest and very frank about how our own systems in regard to the way in which Canada was founded has had a profound impact on Indigenous people in perhaps a different way than some of the legacy of slavery in the Caribbean.
Strongly agree with every word of that. That was basically exactly what I would have said. And the systems have been established from the get-go, and so much of it is now so entrenched. So even with some constitutional amendments, there's going to be a lot of deeply ingrained stuff to examine and to shake off, and that is not necessarily done through a change of deference to the Queen, because let's be real too, we've been shaking off those vestiges for decades. 1931 is when we established more autonomy. More still came in 1982, and yet these conversations about reconciliation are still happening today and now more pressing than ever. So clearly this has not been the way to address that particular issue.
Joita, what do you make of the impact of potentially shaking off some of the colonial impact in Canada if we were to remove that connection to the Queen?
Well, it's interesting what monarchists are saying. That is that a number of Indigenous people have direct treaty relationships with the Crown, and so they might actually be better off having the monarchy in place, but as a way to safeguard their rights. But I think that is a overblown argument. And at the end of the day, as unlikely as it is to happen, I think remembering that a lot of colonial efforts initially were carried out in the name of the king, it would be a necessary step towards decolonization. With all of that said, let's face it, there are reserves without clean drinking water. There are many inequities facing Indigenous kids in care. So many issues that we don't have time to get into. It's not about shaking off the vestiges of the crown as much as it is about having the political will to implement tangible change and improvements on the ground for Indigenous people. And that political will has to come from our elected government. And so it might be a performative piece to get rid of the monarchy, but how much real difference is it going to make to Indigenous people in Canada?
Excellent topic. Thank you, Joita. Coming up next, a group of young Canadians believe restricting voting by age is unconstitutional. We'll discuss whether or not voting age should be lowered. This is the Now News Panel on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.